Hey everyone, it's your host of See Jurassic Right, Stephen Ray Morris here, just dropping in to say I hope you've been enjoying all the new episodes in 2023 and 2024 so far. There are new interviews with filmmakers, musicians, scientists, the screenwriter of Land Before Time, audio essays about the rich history of the Jurassic Park and Jurassic World franchise, and all the news about the upcoming animated show Jurassic World Chaos Theory, and the as-of-yet-untitled Jurassic World sequel coming next summer. I really need your help supporting the show right now, and you can do that by leaving a tip and or giving a monthly follow on Patreon, patreon.com/seejurassicright. There are $1 and $5 tiers, but more is coming. Sharing the show, giving 5-star reviews in Apple Podcasts, and liking and commenting on social, at Stephen Ray Morris on Instagram and Twitter, goes a long way to help boosting the show's visibility again online in this new era. I'm an independent podcaster, and your support is so important and means the world to me in keeping this podcast running. Link to the Patreon is in the show notes. Hold on to your butts. Thank you, and now on to the show.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
1, 2, 3, 4. Filled with odd fright. See Jurassic Right, bathe in amber light. See Jurassic Right, see Jurassic Right, right, right. See Jurassic Right, right, right. See Jurassic Right, right, right. See Jurassic Right, see Jurassic Right, see Jurassic Park.
Okay, cool. I'm excited. I wrote a very long intro for Andrew. Ah, I said his name. Host of Triassic Park, Milkshakes and Mimosas, has the most impressive cat and alien collections, is also now helping edit this podcast as well as Brenna White's Mouthful. It's Andrew Roebuck.
Hello, hello.
It's good to be chatting. We literally just talked for like almost an hour before this. Or no, we exactly. Did talk for an hour. Oh my God.
We 100% were just shooting the breeze for an hour.
Sorry, we did not record that. It's not a Patreon exclusive. We're just catching up. But,
you know, people, you know, there's this thing called hanging out without podcasts. It happens very
what? Sarah from the Percast, Andrew's been a guest multiple times. We're always like, wait, were we talking about this on the pod or outside the pod? This is the dangers of our freelance hustle culture. We don't know when we're on or off anymore. We are just permanently living in a state of talking about cool shit, I guess.
Oh yeah. Nothing's more crazy than talking to somebody about a story that happened in your life and then you slowly realize that you just heard it on a podcast.
Yeah. We're here today also to talk about dinosaurs. And yeah, I think I mentioned in the heyday of Jurassic June, I'm very happy that really the focus was my conversations with Omar and, you know, getting kind of back to the source of just why I like these movies and stuff and, you know, Jurassic Park. And we, you know, specifically focused on the first three movies, you know, the original era. And I realized again, you know, again, the like lokiness of it, of where everything is happening simultaneously, where like I'm getting Facebook memories and TBTs of when my book, Molding a Jurassic Universe, came out in May of 2015. And yeah, I was like, oh, I forgot I wrote a, you know, like,
yeah,
because,
exactly.
Because even this book was like, for those who don't know, or was I talking about the Son of Pod or not? But, you know, my journey back into Jurassic Park was finding a set of cards at Frank and Sons, like an unopened box of JP Tops, and watching Jurassic Collectibles and, you know, other YouTube channels where like, oh, Jurassic has a fandom, like maybe I'll get back into this. And then through like writing for Geek and Sundry and places like that, it was like these writings ended up turning into this book, because I think we were just saying off the pod, like this, I don't even know how it happened, but there was almost this like, after Jurassic World comes out, we're not going to be able to talk about these original movies, because you obviously are, could I call you a film historian? You are
at least an amateur one.
You are a beautifully absorber of film history.
That's so much better.
And that idea as well, too, of like, as far as writing about things, like you can't write about something to me. Okay, this is gonna be really quick, but like to me, like the idea of like watching, like Sarah and I wanted to start a Futurama podcast where we would watch. We even recorded, I think, like 6 episodes. We wanted to do like an episode by episode breakdown and not spoil future episodes. But it's so difficult because it's like, well, I know what happens, so that's going to inform how I feel about rewatching something. So, yeah, I feel like you read a lot of stuff. And to me, it's like interesting. And again, this book, it's like, oh, like this was the last time I could talk about these original Jurassic Park movies without the knowledge of this phase of the franchise, the Jurassic World phase.
Yeah. And I think one of the really strong parts about this book is that it is so much of its time, right? Like, I feel like, you know, I think people sometimes try to present writing like it's timeless. And I actually really prefer writing that's very of its time, because that makes it a very much of a historical piece. Because this is looking on at you and your opinions on the franchise at a very specific point in your life. And it's your opinions at that moment. And it's your opinions going into this movie you haven't seen yet. And all of this stuff is like, you know, molding around in your head to mold a Steven universe. Huh? that really kind of captures a point in time. And, you know, it kind of puts you into this spot in history that, you know, you will never be able to have that experience again. And it's really cool that this is like forever. It's like Amber now. Like, this book is like your Amber. And like this is like, if they were going to clone you from this book, it would be crazy.
Oh gosh.
Would there be feathers? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that's a great point. And yeah, again, that was part of like, yeah, it's the 6th anniversary of this book was earlier this year, but it was like, it's not a book that's like, you know, 5 facts about Jurassic World that Steven got right, you know, like, or whatever. It's not, it wasn't really about that. But when you mentioned that you had listened to the audiobook, I was very touched, and I was like, well, let's just, I don't know. I mean, again, because of your fascination with film history and that kind of the artifactiness of it all, I was like, well, let's just talk about it. And, yeah, I mean, I feel like you might be the only person to have appreciated the Congo quote at the opening.
I loved it. Cause I was like, oh yeah, you know, this is classic Steven. It instantly starts with the Congo quote. And I was like, perfect. Like, you know, we all change throughout 6 years, but there are some things about you that have remained the same. And your love of Congo is one of those. I love there's like a random Mortal Kombat reference in there, and I'm like, oh, there you go. That's textbook Steven there. Steven still loves, you know, Mortal Kombat. And then a whole bunch of alien content where this could literally almost be called Molding a Jurassic and Xenomorph universe.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. And then you've shown me your really impressive alien collection. And I guess what about alien? I'm almost just curious now, like, not almost curious, I am curious. See, like, the language of talking on a podcast versus the sort of more defining language of a book. But, yeah, what was your, did you get into Alien around the same time as, cause again, you love, Universal Monsters, horror movies, Jaws, you know, all these kind of for people who haven't listened to Jurassic Park yet, which I urge you to do, you know, it is, you know, it's monster movies before Jurassic Park, essentially. And yeah, like, what about Alien fascinates you?
It's really fun, because this actually does kind of tie into this book in quite a few ways, is because I think it's Alien 3. I think Alien 3 is what really draws me into Alien. Like, I think Alien, the first movie, is probably my favorite film of all time. Like, just as a piece, I think Alien 1979 is just perfect. Like, every time I watch it, I'm like, yes, I love it. It was way too relatable to watch in 2020. But I think, like, as a franchise, Alien 3, because when I watched it, I was younger, right? And I watched Aliens and I loved Aliens and I loved the ending of Aliens. And then Alien 3 takes all of that. It just takes all of it apart. And it really kind of hammers home, like, what is mortality? What does it mean to survive, essentially? And as a kid, I was like, this is terrible. Like, this, I hate this.
Yeah.
Like, whoa, blah, ruined everything that I love. And like, and now it's like one of my favorite elements of that franchise is because it's just like, this is not a typical sequel in any way, especially not of today. Like, cause it really was built to just end the end everything.
Yeah.
And it does so definitively and not in an upbeat way at all. And it's just really a fascinating character piece. And I think like that, and then I was working insane hours at a company that didn't care about me very much. And like that was kind of been like, you know, from
You're Weyland Yutani.
Yeah, essentially. And I started to become really like connected to the like, oh, like I can relate to the lower on the totem pole people from like the original Alien, and like just, you know, getting an idea of like how the corporate universe works in a lot of ways. And I think that's what really kind of drew me to that franchise. And I do like that. Like for me, Alien is just a franchise that one can be very depressing, or it can be uplifting, and it can be, sometimes it can be both. And it also has a lot of movies that really make people mad. Like, it's not really a cohesive universe in many ways. And just seeing how it's dealt with that is very interesting. And the expanded universe just kind of ran up and kind of hit me because I started listening to a podcast and they were like, chatting about the expanded universe. And then I was like, I have a lot of time at this job, so I'm just going to listen to all these audiobooks. And I just never stopped.
Wow. I mean, yeah. I mean, you're right, though. To me, that's why there is a DNA of... I like how I just half commit to the jokes about the stuff. But I mean, there is, to me, thematically very I mean, they deal with it in very different ways. Like, again, like if Paul Reiser is, I mean, he's almost more, he's like in between Hammond and Gennaro. Burke is his name in Aliens. And I would almost say the Alien franchise, or at least the first few movies, are more in... similar in tone to the original Jurassic Park book. Crichton was very critical of, it's very funny because it's that thing of like, he was a brilliant, he literally was like doing his rounds as after graduating from medical school. And he's like, I don't want to be a doctor. And also I hate doctors and I hate most scientists, but also I'm going to try and explain everything really well so that a whole generation of kids grow up wanting to be scientists. Like, what a wild, journey, you know, in that sense. But like, I think in some ways, a lot of Jurassic Park is more hopeful. And it's the idea that almost like the sort of evils of corporate greed and all those things and the hubris of man can be superseded by the sublime power of nature. Whereas I almost think Alien is more cruel.
Yeah, that's very true. I think one of the best essays in this book is when you really talk about how, you know, Spielberg comes at this with like a lot more, a thousand times more sympathetic view of John Hammond, and really kind of in that first movie is really talking about the wonder of this.
Yeah.
In a way that I think is really hard to, get it. It's not there in the Crichton book. The Crichton book has a little bit of wonder, but it's like, it's meaner. It's definitely meaner. And Hammond is much less of a dreamer and more of a schemer, I would almost say, in that one. And it really is fascinating because, Spielberg also did Jaws, right? And the book for Jaws is also very depressing. I mean, there's like affairs, there's the mob. It's like the sheriff is like a sad man who's just is a loser, pretty much.
I would love to read the original Jaws. I gave I found an original. It might not be the first run, but I found like an original copy of the book I gave to Karen for her birthday this year. And
yeah,
like seeing the cover and the author just looking like so 70s, like I was like, oh, I kind of want to read this book now. Cause yeah, I don't know anything about the book.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting to tackle because you know so much about like the Crichton, like looking at how Spielberg adapted Jaws. And now, of course, like, you know, there's writers and like a lot, like Spielberg is not the sole creator of each of these. We've got David Koepp in this and there's like, Carl Gottlieb in the case of Jaws. But the way that these things are adapted and the way that Spielberg adapts them is very similar, I find, in a lot of ways that make them like an interesting character study because, you know, there's a lot more, you know, I feel like at his core, Spielberg is an optimist, it feels like. And he like he can make dark stories, but there's always a level of hope. And I mean, like, even in, you know, his darkest stuff, which like Schindler's List and everything like that, like there is a very deliberate element of hope in that. And he has this view of movies as like a tool for like fantasy and to get away and to live these other worlds, and how that can impact our own world is he's a very fascinating character, I would say.
No, I watched the documentary about him, the HBO doc, a few years ago, and I was like, oh, like as somebody who I, you know, grew up loving, like I'd never really thought about his own personal life, but then that was like a really cool. It's almost like Steven Spielberg is like, he's like a middle ground between like a Miyazaki, who like he is so miserable, but yet he, the more miserable he is, the more optimistic his movies are, you know?
Yeah, 100%.
But he has a collection of essays. He's done two books.
Not read those. Those sounds cool.
And the first one, they're both, I think one is like Starting Point and Middle Point. I don't know. The first one I read, and one of my favorite quotes from it is, "What is hope but to suffer with the ones you love?" And I was like, that is such a crunchy Miyazaki quote. And I feel like now that you're saying this, like, yeah, Spielberg isn't quite there, but there is this almost like deliberate element of like, I don't think you could make a movie like Jurassic Park now and have Hammond be redeemable and lovable in that way by the end, you know?
No, because in real life, we have people like Elon Musk promising dinosaurs, right? Like we have like these people who like are, we know as are not great. Like, I think we are too knowledgeable about the capitalist underpinnings that wouldn't be needed for like a Jurassic Park, where like now in like, in this idea of like, no, like this is a Jurassic Park born from dreams.
Yeah.
And I love how you even bring up in the book, you even bring up like his take on like Hook with Peter Pan too. Like you kind of like use all of those elements of his past career to really talk about how it informed Jurassic Park in a great way.
Oh, thank you. I was about to say the only good billionaire is Rihanna, but like,
well, yeah, of course.
But this just made me think again before we dive into more Jurassic Park stuff or whatever. But like, I've told you, I've never seen. I think I've maybe seen a little bit of Jaws 2 and maybe 3 on TV. Like, I think I only remember the like SeaWorld like tank scene or what, like, you know, the walkway that people go through at a lot of aquariums. Like, I think I remember that, you know, as we're comparing these franchises that have very strong openings and then kind of have been searching their way ever since. What, like, tell me about the Jaws franchise. I really know nothing. Like, is it similar in a way to like an Alien or a Jurassic Park, or is it kind of
less of a
cohesive thing?
Oh, it's like, well, they try to be cohesive and it just does not work. It does not work. Cause like the elements that they take is they try to, like, there's a core Brody family in the first movie, and they try to pretty much make it so that various members of the Brody family are the focus of further movies. And it just keeps getting more and more ridiculous until in Jaws Revenge, it's literally a shark hunting them down for revenge.
How do they showcase the shark's motivation? It's like, oh, I hate them, you know, like,
well,
like how do
book,
you show that side the, of the story?
In the novelization, it's a literal voodoo core curse. But
what?
In, yeah. In the novelization, there's a voodoo curse put on the Brodies, and that's how the sharks, like, get attached to them mystically. In the movie, you just get it from dialogue, because like Ellen Burstyn, who is great in Jaws, wow, Revenge, is basically like, it's hunting us, it's killing our entire family, because she like moves out to the Barbados after it like attacks them in Amity Island, and like they're all the way like across the ocean and it comes for them, and like everyone is like, mom, you're like kind of crazy, and she's like, no, I'm not, they're out to get us. But
wow,
what's fascinating is, you know, I think Jaws is like from a very, like what you think of when people would talk about old sequels where they talk maybe about the law of diminishing returns and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I do feel like that is very much on play in the Jaws franchise. And I think the biggest issue is that they kind of hampered creators after the first Jaws.
Yeah.
Because like in Jaws 2, it's like they had a whole idea and a whole different director and different cast involved. And they filmed like, I think they filmed maybe about 30% of the movie, and then they scrapped it all and redid it.
Whoa.
And
that's very Solo in a way.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I think Jaws 2 is fun, but like it's definitely a step down. And it was one of those things where you get all these cases in the Jaws franchises of not letting creative people have their way. Because, like, the original Jaws 3 was actually supposed to be a comedy called Jaws 3 People Zero. And it was supposed to be like a
wow,
wacky, zany comedy about Jaws. The script is terrible for it, but it looks like it was supposed to be, like, you know, have a creative person, like, do their spin on it. And it really got hampered down by just, you know, not being able to have much control, because because like, you know, Spielberg had ideas for a prequel to Jaws that was like, all set on like a boat, the USS
oh,
Indianapolis,
wow,
like the
oh,
whole,
wow,
yeah. And there's a great last podcast episode,
yes,
all about the Indianapolis sequence sinking, and he was going
to
make a movie.
Went into the water. None came out.
And yeah, and he wanted to make a prequel for that, but they're like, no. So then he's just like not interested. And you can really see when, you know, Jurassic Park came around, he was like, Spielberg was like, they're going to make a sequel to this. I want to have more control over this. Like, I want to let what I want to do happen. And
you
I
made
think,
Michael Crichton write a book and then didn't use it.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like, pretty much.
What a dick. No, just,
but really, he wanted to have more control over the Jurassic franchise, because he didn't have much control over the original Jaws franchise.
Yeah.
And I think there's still like some remake rights that like Spielberg holds, and that's the reason why there's no more Jaws movies.
Wow.
He just like refuses. I think one of the most interesting, like, you know, going through effects work, you can really understand why CG changed so much for him, Spielberg in specific, because you learn about how bad and how terrible his experience was on Jaws, where it was all practical effects, right?
Oh, yeah.
And you get the same thing with James Cameron on Aliens versus the rest of his career. It's because these people like lived and sweated and had all these terrible experiences trying to make practical effects work. And they're very like creative people who have like a very specific idea of how they want to tell a story. And they're like, they're not able to do that because they don't have the endless possibilities that they do with CGI. And
yeah,
you can really see them like latch on and really take that to the nth degree in their later careers.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was really, must have really been an amazing thing for like Spielberg to see CGI, because he'd be like, oh my God, I have complete control. Like,
yeah,
I can make everything I want happen. And, you know, there's like pluses and minuses to that, obviously.
I can't CGI happiness.
But I can't CGI smiles on all their faces.
Oh.
I love it. But yeah, there's always pluses and minuses to that, because one of the things that makes, you know, the original Jaws so well is that, you know, you don't see much of the shark. It's all.
Yeah.
And I think what's amazing about Jurassic Park is it's the perfect in between.
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways. And it's one of those things where, like, looking at, you know, how other franchises exist, you can really kind of get a better idea of what Jurassic Park franchise was.
Well, and it's interesting too, and that's why I was like curious to learn a little bit more about Jaws, was because we're living in that age where, yeah, things are rebooted, remade, and again, things aren't reboots. They're just sort of like, let's wiping the slate clean, like, let's actually acknowledge everything is, you know, and it makes sense because it's like, companies, they don't want to say, hey, your shit didn't matter. Like, here's how we can make everything matter. Like, that's
right.
Why our, like, obsession with canon has only, like, increased tenfold. And, like, rides don't need to be canon. I don't understand. Anyway, but I was going to...
You do rant about that in the book, so that's completely
yes.
Accurate.
I'm consistent. But I was going to say, because, yeah, it seems like Spielberg and the Alien franchise, in some ways, they still have, there's been a little bit of like, let's trot out the director and be like, I approve, you know, like, even if they have nothing to do with the future sequels. Whereas my impression of Jaws was that it was almost like, thanks guys for the money. And then the studio went off and did their own thing.
That's pretty much what happened. Cause every time Spielberg would want to do something, they would just shoot it down. And you're like, all right, screw this. I don't care.
Yeah. No, again, studios are like, look, if we at least have the impression and have these like ridiculous pull quotes where it's like, oh, it's bad. It's like people talking about their, it's like a band that gets back together and talks about their new album. Like, it's the most realest thing we've ever done. It's like, I don't think Terminator Dark Fate, you know, like.
My favorite thing about every time a new Terminator movie comes out, they like just drag James Cameron into a studio to say that he loves it. And people don't remember, because like none of the Terminator is one of the insane, most insane franchises, because they have like no connective tissues, essentially. And one of the funniest things is like every single, I think even Terminator Salvation had like a pull quote from James Cameron saying like, yeah, this has the spirit of the original. It's just as good as the original. And then the new one comes out. It's like Terminator Genesis. And he's like, it's got the spirit of the original. It's just as good as the original. And then Terminator Dark Fate comes out. It's got the spirit of the original. Is this the same clip? Did you just play the same clip?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. They just age him up. Like, add some gray hair and be like, let's just reuse this in perpetuity as every time we make the franchise. Yeah. I mean, I think, from my understanding, Spielberg is more involved in Jurassic than
definitely
maybe some might think, just from what I've heard. For you, I guess, you know, again, diving into this stuff, like, you grew up watching those movies, and then, like, what was seeing Jurassic World for you like?
It was fascinating, because, you know, I think, like, the biggest, like, for me, the biggest Jurassic Park movies were The Lost Worlds and JP3, because I was like very much of the age where it's like everything, like the Lost World was like that Christmas, all of my toys were like the Lost Worlds toys, and like it was every single one of those. And the same thing happened when Jurassic Park 3 came out. Like, I even have like I still have the Jurassic Park 3 board game, where you can play as like the dinosaurs and stuff like that. So I was kind of like really ripping and raring and getting really excited for this. And it was everything I kind of wanted, because I don't think I've revisited Jurassic World in a long time. Maybe not even since it came out, which is a bit of a surprise, considering like I've seen, you know, the other ones a lot. I really like all the other ones. But when I first saw Jurassic World, it was very much like, oh my God, like this is what I wanted. Like, it's like, it's a legacy sequel. And it's like, kind of like, oh my God. And it ends in like a Godzilla fight, essentially. Like,
Cause your love of Godzilla as well too.
Yeah. Yeah. And it melded all those things together. And for some reason, it's the one I don't revisit too much. Cause I don't know if I'm afraid, cause like I had such a good experience with it. and the internet has kind of like for the last 6 years just told me it's consistently terrible, and I'm always afraid to go back and revisit Jurassic World because I enjoy it so much, and I had such like a good reaction to it, and I just really love Bryce Dallas Howard. Is she so good in all those movies? And I really liked, I even liked the kids in that. Like, I thought it all worked, and it all, I had a very emotional reaction to it in the theater, actually. Yeah, so it really worked for me, and I guess that's the reason why I'm afraid to revisit it, because it did work really well for me.
Yeah, I mean, for my, you know, I'm somebody who, I think you know this about me, but like, I'm definitely somebody who loves everything the first time I see it. Right. And it's like the more I watch something, the more I discover its flaws. Huh, I wonder what that says about me. But like, so for me, and I did a really fun episode with Perry Nemiroff from Collider, where we kind of talked about just the nature of ranking our Jurassic Park films and sort of how that changes over the years, if it changes at all. And, you know, when Jurassic World came out, it was, you know, right at like literally a month after this book was published. I was like, well, this is my favorite movie. This is my favorite Jurassic film since the original, but has since dropped to the very bottom.
Yeah. Well, and I think in a lot of ways, I think that I probably would have that view nowadays because, and I almost wonder if that's because of where culture went. Because at the time, because in many ways, Jurassic World is more of a legacy sequel than it is like a sequel to the 2 and 3. Like, 2 and 3 are still technically canon, but it's really trying to call back to, like, Jurassic Park, the original. And it's very heavy on nostalgia. It's very, like, heavy on these moments of, like, do you remember the Visitor Center? And, like, there's, like, all these, like, very, you know, big moments of that. And I don't know if now that would work for me because I don't know if I like that anymore. But not because of it's not Jurassic World's fault that all of pop culture became that way.
Yeah.
So, well, it's like, it's weird.
In this book, I remember very much thinking about, and I love the love what you just called it, a legacy sequel. I think honestly, that's kind of the perfect name for a lot of these movies, because to me, and I think I say this in the book, but like Skyfall, The Muppets Movie, Jurassic World, Force Awakens, they're all the same movie. They all begin with this false premise that it's like, you don't care about X anymore, so we're going to show you why X is vital and essential to moving forward, even if we're going to have a new generation or new ideas. But ultimately, that's a false premise because these movies wouldn't get made if people still didn't love them.
Right, exactly. It's kind of it's one of the same things that happens in like even the Halloween franchise. The newest Halloween movie
was very much
that, where they threw out all the other sequels like, this is just a sequel to number one. You remember the first one? And it's like, it's always like a weird thing to kind of happen because, you know, I would not get tired of dinosaurs. Like the whole conceit of Jurassic World is like, people have died of old dinosaurs. And I'm like, people aren't tired of warthogs. Like I would just be like of normal zoos. Like, I don't think anyone's bored of a gorilla or like, or of like a cheetah or anything like right?
Yeah, you're right. Cause this premise would almost make more sense if in our real world, people didn't care about those kind of things anymore either.
Right. And we'll talk about that in a little bit because you have a very interesting chapter about zoos and whether or not you would go to Jurassic Park, which I think fascinating to talk about. But it is that false premise because it's just like, because I remember watching it and I was like, oh yeah, the old school still good because the Raptor and the T-Rex beat the new guy. And like now modern me is like, destroy the burn the past. Like, it's basically like I'm Yoda in The Last Jedi and I'm like, get rid of the past, burn it and move forward.
Yeah, we're the Spinosaurus, we're the, well, depending on what version of Alien 3 you watch, you're the cow or the dog alien. It's this thing of, to me, I almost wonder if Jurassic World would have been better if they had taken like almost like a Blackfish angle, which I think I also talk about in the book.
Yes, you do.
Where it's like appealing to our sympathies, which is why I think Fallen Kingdom is ultimately a better movie than Jurassic World. But also, I had this envisioning for the opening of Jurassic World because again, that false premise is kind of mixed even more, because we obviously see a kid who loves dinosaurs and isn't sick of them, but that's not reinforcing or I thought you said everyone was sick of them. So like, it's confusing the metaphor. And I almost think a better opening would have been Claire going throughout her day and we're seeing these wonders that she's just bored of. And we're like, no, right. Claire, look, that's amazing. And like, you want the audience almost to have that urgency of like wanting to root for the premise almost. And I feel like, yeah, with Jurassic World, ultimately, I mean, I'm glad we got there, but like, at, you know, in a way the movie is Claire coming, like realizing that, but it's like, I almost wish the movie would have honed on that even more personally.
Right. And it's, I think one of the things that's interesting about Jurassic World is that Fallen Kingdom brings all the characters to much more interesting places.
Yeah.
So you're like way more, sometimes I have problem, like if we're like a TV show, like if you're at season 3 of a TV show and they've gone through all of this amazing character development, sometimes it's hard to go back to like season 1 and just like watch it. And you're like, oh man, like Mulder and Scully aren't kissing. Like,
what's
going on here? You know, you're so used to where the characters are. It's sometimes kind of not as interesting to go back. And I think the thing about Fallen Kingdom, I think, asks a lot more interesting questions too.
Yes.
Which I think is one of those things like where it's like, what is our responsibility for what we have created versus like what is natural, right? And like all these interesting elements. And there's also like, it feels like there's more of a stamp, like a stylistic stamp.
Oh my gosh,
on
of course.
Fallen Kingdom, because it's like, yeah, it's like a gothic horror film in the middle of that movie. And it's all filmed in a way that no other Jurassic film has been, and Jurassic World is very much of, this is what Jurassic Park was like. Don't you remember? Look, this character has a t-shirt. That's the original Jurassic Park. Whoa.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It is very interesting to kind of tackle what the world has become after Jurassic World.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, I mean, let me just ask you right now, what is your ranking of the 5 movies? And you can include Battle of Big Rock, but like, come on, guys, it's a short film. You can't compare it to a full length movie.
I like Battle of Big Rock is great. I'm not, what, you want me to put Camp Cretaceous in there too? Like, I don't know. What are we talking about here? It's hard because, like, okay, 1 is obviously number 1. For me, 1 is obviously number 1. And then it might be, like, 3, Fallen Kingdom, Lost World, Jurassic World. And I don't know what it is about 3 that compels me so. Because I almost wonder if, like, things like this podcast makes me love 3 even more, right? Because, like, I feel like, you know, the Billy Brennan songs, just like really, like watching it, it feels like I'm having fun with friends, even if we're not talking about it right away. It's like, oh, this is a fun, you know, I can make jokes with Steven. This is very fun. Like, it's very much like, I associate JP3 with community almost. Like, it's like a very much like, this is one of those movies that, like, you know, if we're talking about Jurassic Park movies and you're like, Alan Raptor, I appreciate him. And I'm like, yes, we can hang out and have a conversation and have fun. It is very much like JP3 is very much also like a classic dinosaur film as well.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, I think maybe your background in more classic monster movies of yore probably helps you appreciate it maybe more than like, yeah, people who like our first monster movie was the 1998 Godzilla, you know, like.
Right. Right. I also like, I love Alan Grant. And I think it's just one of those things about like the more Alan Grant in a movie, the more I am in love with it, basically. I wanted to be him as a kid. So.
No, I mean, I would say most people feel the same way. And yeah, I was going to say my ranking is basically the same as yours right now, but I would flip Fallen Kingdom and JP3.
Right.
Because I just think like Blue crying to me is like, cool, we got a dinosaur crying. Like, yeah, like we're at that point in the franchise. We're like, I mean, to me, like there's something so beautifully physical about Fallen Kingdom with blood and snot and tears. And like, I will say I agree with some more criticisms like later in the Fallen Kingdom's release where like it is amazing that they had much more animatronic focus, but in a way it like made the film at some points feel smaller because scenes were just basically like, here's an animatronic in the middle and everyone's surrounding it. And it's like, I kind of understand that criticism of it, but at the same time I'm like, yeah, but it was worth it to me.
Right. I bet you like that flip-flopping will happen with me as well, because like one of the things about Fallen Kingdom is that it kind of does embody my current worldview in a lot of ways, like the way that it very much is like positive towards like, you have, if humans caused the problem, press the button. We have to like, if humans caused the problem, we have to solve it. And like the solving is not just murder. I think about this a lot because, like, you know, the Purrcast and in a lot of ways talking about TNR, talking about how to properly like care for like feral animals and make sure and talk about like their environmental impact and everything like that. And I always think the proper answer is we humans created this problem. We should find a compassionate solution for it.
Yes. No, And I wonder, if that's the road moving forward with Dominion in a way where it's reconciling that even more by having like much more of the original cast in it. But
yeah, of course. I think like Laura Dern is the greatest human to have ever lived. So like,
yep.
I think JP3, even though it has very minimal Dern, it does have that Dern bump. So.
Yeah. Oh, you got to appreciate the Dern bump. But I think you hit it on the head very well. Like for me, and I, you know, that's how Brenna and I really connected was over our love of JP3. And that idea that like, I do love Lost World. And I think talking to Omar and my friend Annie, like my friend Megan, like they have great opinions on Lost World. And again, like the King Kongness of it all. But ultimately, like JP3 is just so much fun to talk about.
Yeah. I think that is that thing. I love the Lost World. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, even if it's like lower on my list, like, that doesn't mean I don't like The Lost World.
Well, of
right?
course, yeah. Yeah.
It's a very fun movie.
Yeah, but yeah, for me, it's just JP3. And it makes me wonder, you know, because there's a great podcast that's been coming out called Stuck on Sorna, which is this guy, Daniel Steven. He does this huge deep dive into JP3. He's interviewed Ed Varroe. Like, he's interviewed tons of people. He interviewed me on it for it, just, you know, to get, like, regular Joe's opinion. But yeah, he's interviewed a lot of
regular Joe, but
regular Joe Johnston. but he's been like actually chatting with a lot of. It's one of those things where it's like people think, oh, I'll just chat with the director and the writer, and like that's it. It's like, no, there's so many other people involved in making these movies. I would love to hear the production designer. I would love to hear those people's opinions on it. And I believe he broke some information that like. Essentially, Alexander Payne wrote 2/3 of JP3. He created the Kirbys, you know, and he wanted to put more Laura Dern, but basically he just kind of got swept up in other stuff.
Right.
And they basically just had to finish, you know, they had to film JP3 with basically like a 2/3 of an Alexander Payne script.
Wow.
And, you know, to me, it's like, I just wonder, like, what would it have been like if because you talk about the comediness of Jaws 3, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like there is, again, in the book, I think I like really like that's one of those things I've been focusing on so much of JP3. And I'm actually almost trying to break away from that interpretation of JP3 as a black comedy, because I don't know, I just want to like look at the film in other ways. But that for me has like really preoccupied me since this book, really, is like the black comedy nature of it. Like, again, imagining Paul Giamatti playing Grant in this movie could easily work.
Right. Yeah. No, it's a very interesting movie. Because in the book, it seems like, you know, it one of my favorite things about JP3 in this book is that you have an interpretation that I had never even crossed my mind before. And that is that T-Rex is supposed to be Junior. Like, it's supposed to be like the baby, because you in the book, you literally go like, this makes Junior the martyr of the Jurassic Park franchise. And I'm like, I had never put that in my head. I was just like, yeah, that's another T-Rex. That is really, really an interesting way to look at it, because it's like, oh, make it pulling your heartstrings and like destroying this character. And I'm like, whoa, I did not interpret it that way. And it was very interesting to hear that interpretation.
Well, and it is one of those things that, like, you know, because Jurassic Park as a franchise has, you know, in some ways some of the most minimal content per franchise time ratio, you know,
right.
You know, you think about Marvel, you think about Star Wars and the amount of expanded stuff. So it's like the quote unquote plot hole about Rexy and the height of the, you know, fence or whatever. And like Junior, like the Rex and JP3, like there's these kind of lingering questions that like we just debate and talk about over the years, because in the JP3 commentary on the original DVD, I believe it's Stan Winston or John Rosengrant that do say something to the effect of like, in our minds, we were thinking this was the grown up baby T-Rex from The Lost World, and so,
yeah.
And again, because of the themes and the things that I was thinking about with JP3, like as far as the black comediness, the sort of Coen Brothers-y vibe sometimes of like, look at all these idiots in over their head, that I think Alexander Payne was going for, you know?
Oh yeah, 100%.
And so to me, just having the baby T-Rex from The Lost World grow up to be this, you know, this male T-Rex that gets, you know, neck snapped by the Spinosaurus. Like, it just was another like cruel, hilariously cruel fate, you know?
Right. And it's so fascinating because, like, again, like, of course, this is pre-Fallen Kingdom, but the way that Fallen Kingdom plays with the very deliberate energy in that the final, like the Brachiosaur demise as they leave the island. And the way that it uses the imagery and the way that it, like, it really invokes like the majesty of the death of the Brachiosaur. And there's no majesty in JP3.
There's Benny Hill music. You know, like.
Yeah, one of my favorite things in the book is when you're like, and they sped up the theme two times. And I'm like, when that happened, I was like, oh, Steven, I'm listening to this at 2x speed because that we podcast in an hour and I need to get through it. This is hilarious. Like, you know, like,
oh my gosh.
The first time I didn't. I just listened to it at normal speed, obviously. But like, we're getting ready to podcast today. I wanted to re-listen to it. And I was going at 2x speed.
No, I appreciate that you, I mean, you listened and, but you know, there are people who listen to podcasts at 10x speed.
That's not possible. Like, I don't understand that. Also, like, I know that I already speak fast, so it's like, am I just a chipmunk to people? Like, me, me, me? I don't know.
You're Alvin and the Chipmunks, you know, as a film. You're, oh my gosh, why can't I think of one film historian right now? You're Pauline, you're a chipmunk Pauline Kael. Here we go.
Chipmunk Pauline Kael.
Dori Shafrir actually wrote a great art. She's been on SJR. She talked about getting stuck on the JP3, or on the Jurassic Park ride at Universal Studios.
Oh, yeah.
But Dori Shafrir wrote a great article, I think for BuzzFeed, about the podcast speedheads who like listen to podcasts at like 10 speed. You know, I'll include that link in this episode because it's a really fun. I mean, again, as somebody who edits podcasts, like my brain just broke thinking about it, you know?
Well, yeah, because we essentially like editing a podcast is listening to it at like 25 speed, essentially. Because you like listen to a thing, go, oh, is that a weird sound? Listen. Slow down. Zoom in. Listen.
Oh my God. Yeah, you're right. That's a great point. Yeah, we are literally listening. Yeah, like sometimes it changes a little bit, but like there are times where, I mean, to me, like especially if people are starting out editing and like if they're asking me for advice or whatever, it's like, honestly, like if a podcast is an hour, multiply the time that it'll take to edit like by like 2.5 or your three sometimes.
Oh, yeah. 100%. Especially starting out and always have multiple tracks if you can, so you can really isolate the weird sounds.
Yeah, no, it's just, yeah, the JP3-ness of it is very, again, just makes it the most fun. And I think even with Omar and I, we were just like, God, like you're right. Like, yeah, Andrew, that's such a great point of like, it just weirdly, and because the movie was, and I think now because the nature of the making of that movie is very well known, it's almost like, I can't be mad at you. You know, like you tried your best, you know, like it's just very scrappy in a way that like, and the way nostalgia works and, you know,
of course, right.
With, you know, certain movies, when a generation that was like 10 to 13, when they like that movie, when those people are in their 30s, which is like happening now, you know, I was 13 or 14 when JP3 came, I think it was 14. You know, now that I'm in my mid 30s, I'm like, oh man, I love the Spinosaurus. But it's like, wait a minute, we all hated the Spinosaurus when we were that age. It's, you know, it's very strange.
Yeah, it is very strange. And I think like one of the things like about like JP3 in Pacific is that it's not setting up a larger story. It's an event. Like it's just it's contained. Like it's very much a contained movie. Like there's nothing in that movie that's like, come back for JP4 and like see what's gonna happen with the eggs. Billy brought the eggs home. Whoa. Yeah. Like there's nothing like that. Like it's not like, because, you know, you watch a Marvel movie now, there's like pieces are left open for future sequels, obviously. Yeah. That's kind of because that's how franchises work right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's none of that in JP3. And that's so unusual for nowadays sequels.
Well,
and the containedness, I think, is one of the benefits.
And weirdly, I'd almost argue that like over the years, again, as another element of franchising, is trying to make retroactively make moments more essential.
Right.
There is some elements of JP3 to me that have like stuck out since of like the nature of people kind of getting used to this sort of ever-present idea of dinosaurs maybe being around, poaching, touristing stuff, and sort of a an acknowledgement of trauma of the original survivors of like, who cares, dinosaurs? Like that to me, and the nature of the Spinosaurus being sort of more of a monster than am I a man or a Muppet? You know, like is this like more of a dinosaur or more of a monster than a dinosaur? I think that stuff in a way has, in my brain, sort of set you up for this world of Jurassic World with the Indominus and
that's for sure.
The disregard for sort of the danger of Jurassic World and sort of the callousness or the sort of carelessness of it, of its creation. So that to me has like sort of retroactively kind of carried over. And then also in canon or in the world, a lot of the sort of, because again, Jurassic Park fans, we have like, I mean, the idea that Camp Cretaceous has given us, I can't do math. It's given us like, you know, almost like 10 hours of new Jurassic Park lore and content is insane. But, you know, before that, it's like we had this DPG website that was essentially saying like, Wu went back to Sorna. He created the Spinosaurus. Like there's a world in which like, if they had made all these movies with like knowing they were going to do it, like there would be a scene in the lab in JP3 where they find like, and it kind of calls back to the original Lost World book where it's like some stuff is still active and working. And like, wouldn't that have been a cool mystery to set up where you're like, oh, like people are back making dinosaurs. What does that mean? And then you go to Jurassic World and like Wu is like the head guy and like, you know, but that's a whole other thing. But
no, but that is interesting, right? And that's something that I think like maybe like a book or something could do really well. Like if I'm really one of the things that I'm most surprised about of the Jurassic World franchise is they just don't, like, there's a few books, but there's not many. There's like, there's nowhere near the amount that there is for like Star Wars or like even Alien. There's an insane amount of books in the Alien franchise about everything, like so much stuff.
I interviewed Tess Sharp about her novel, The Evolution of Claire, which was really great. And in, it references the Lost World. Like Claire saw that moment on TV because the news obviously was covering it. I mean, it was CNN, you know? Yeah, it is a real shame that we haven't gotten like the evolution of Woo, the evolution of Muldoon, or, you know, it's hard because it's like, can you do Jurassic Park stories without dinosaurs?
Right. That is the question. Although, like, I mean, like the evolution of Muldoon was around for a while, and there was clearly other Velociraptor incidents that happened because they really looked at that, right? You could use
that. And yeah, you could even just, you know, I mean, I think even his work in Africa and stuff would be really interesting. You could even like sew some Congo related connections or something like that.
Yes. See, this is why you need to write this.
I know. Well, hey, look, if anyone's listening, give me a call. Here's my phone number. No, as we've been talking, which has been amazing, I really appreciate that you read it because I'm like, I don't necessarily want to like go back with my own stuff and be like, isn't this great? But isn't it great? No,
it is. I listened to it twice. I enjoyed it both times.
See, you don't have to take it from me, listeners. Andrew Roebuck is his opinion I trust. So, you know, I just have to go with what Andrew says. It's not my fault. What did I write? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't even remember. But I guess for you, is there things that you read that you have thoughts on or just sort of themes and things that you've been thinking about in your own work as well, too?
Does Prometheus still hurt you? Like, you see...
I'm trying to remember which chapter I talked about Prometheus.
It was, like, right near the end. Because you talk about, like, the Barbasol being the space jockey. And then you talk about how...
I love that essay.
Yeah,
essay. I think I'm, like, most proud of, if anything, in this book.
No, it's a great essay. But, like, when you get to, like, Prometheus, it's just, like... And Prometheus is sloppy, and I'm like, I mean, you're not wrong in a lot of ways,
Prometheus is a sloppy angry bitch.
Yeah, it seems like a very angry view. And what do you think about going into, say, Jurassic World, comparing it to Prometheus as like that thing of like where you're revisiting a very familiar idea, and how do you do that, and whether or not it was as successful, it has the same pitfalls, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting because Ridley Scott don't give a fuck. I don't know if you've listened to the Prometheus commentary.
Oh, I have.
It's so funny where he's like, oh, this new upstart is trying to tell me what to do. Like, it's just, oh my gosh.
So funny. It's so, because like everyone's on someone to be like, hey, this is kind of like what happened in Alien versus Predator. And like, Ridley Scott just like gave him a look and is like, we did not talk about those films. Like,
Yeah. I mean, we haven't really gotten an example of this. Like, we've never, like, James Cameron hasn't gone back to Aliens. Like, I mean, Ridley Scott is kind of the only, like, Spielberg hasn't directed another Jurassic Park. Like, there isn't an example of a filmmaker coming back after the legacy-ness has been explored. So, like, Ridley Scott was kind of like, and I think other people have said this, Angie Hahn, a really great writer.
Oh, yeah, she's
a huge Prometheus fan, and I feel like she's made me appreciate that movie more. But I think there is this kind of idea that, like the best parts about Prometheus and what was the sequel called?
Alien Covenant.
Oh, yeah. Like those movies, like the most interesting stuff about those movies have nothing to do with the alien stuff.
Yeah, no, that's completely fair. And I was just kind of surprised to like in this because, you know, Alien comes up a lot in this book.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Alien 3 comes up, Alien, Aliens. Talking about, like, you know, how you deal with some of the characters and how you feel about these characters going into the next chapter. And I was just interested to see, like, what your story was with the Alien franchise, and how that kind of related to this book.
Yeah, I mean, it is, you know, and I think that's maybe more of, like, a personal preference, but it's almost like, yeah, I mean, the stuff about Prometheus and Alien Covenant, which I only saw on a plane, so I kind of want to rewatch it just because I feel like when you're kind of in the haze of being on an airplane, like I watched, that was a crazy, because I was coming back from Australia from the MFM tour in 2017.
Wow.
And I watched, you know, because the plane rides are long. So I watched Kong. And I actually never watch movies on planes. I just feel like I can't, I don't know. It just doesn't work for me.
Right.
But on that flight, I was like, I don't know. Just I such a long flight. I was like, I don't know. I can't focus on like, I'm not going to read two books or whatever. But
right.
Because I normally either sleep or read on airplanes. But yeah, I watched Kong Skull Island. Then I watched Alien Covenant, and then I fell asleep like a third of the way through The Mummy.
Tom Cruise one.
Yeah. So, yeah. I will almost say it's almost like, yeah, I mean, I still think I haven't watched Prometheus in a long time, but I still maybe would guess that I have this sort of, Ridley Scott is, in a way, that it's very true to himself. He is exploring what he found interesting about it's like the Bob Dylan-ness of it, where it's like he's going to play, I don't know if you know this, but the way Bob Dylan chooses what songs to play now, he listens to other people covering his songs. And he's like, that's an interesting version of my song. And then he basically kind of plays that version of it instead of how he originally played it.
Oh, fascinating. Yeah, I can see that. It's always very interesting for a creator to come back to a piece of work after it's already been sequelized and changed and everything like that. Like, it's very, it's like if, like, what would it look like if George Lucas came back to direct the next Star Wars movie? Like, yeah, that would be crazy and insane, and they shouldn't do it. But or they should. I don't know. Whatever. I like George. I'm not trying to.
At this point, I'm kind of just game for whatever. I feel like maybe that's my attitude now. But yeah, I definitely think Prometheus, for me, it was like, it's that more personal thing of like, he's not exploring the things that I was curious about. You know?
Oh yeah. No, that makes total sense. You think you'd ever write like a sequel to this book? Because like, it's almost like, I don't know if I would, I don't want you to do a revised version of this book, because then the version 2 might be the only one people read. And I think this is a very intense, like, this version is very of a time and place that's really cool. I would be interested to hear like a sequel to this almost.
Thank you.
You know, it's been 6 years, like, you've started this podcast. There's like a whole, like, your relationship with this franchise has forever changed just by all the people you've talked to and all the people you've like interacted with. And I just think it's, you know, I think a lot of things you talk about in this movie is it's very awesome, because this is just your opinions on things. Right. And I love listening to conversations with people. Those are amazing. Like, that's what podcasts are made for. But I also really like just you saying your opinions and not having to like paint it in a way that has like more open to interpretation or open for discussion. Just, here's what I thought about this movie at this time.
Yeah.
And just laying it out there. And I would love to hear like a sequel to this book, because, you know, I think this book is really good, actually. Like, I'm pretty sure I will listen to this multiple times. Like, I'm sure whenever I want to like revisit the Jurassic Park franchise and kind of go back to that point in history, like, I do think that this is a very good touchstone. Also, I do want to say I listened to the audiobook, and the person who read it was Joshua Kumler. He does a really interesting, version of someone I always hear speak of, like, reading your words.
Oh, wow. Fascinating. That's fascinating. Yeah. I've actually never listened to it. It's sometimes hard to revisit your own stuff.
But of course.
But
he does a good job.
Oh, well, I mean, that's great to hear. And no, I mean, I really appreciate that. And I mean, in some ways, the podcast is the sequel to the book.
That's very true. That is very true.
You know, because at the time when I was writing this, again, I was like, you know, I started to follow Jurassic Outpost. I maybe had seen a few Clayton videos, Victoria's Cantina, Jurassic Park podcast, you know, with Brad. I think this was before Tom Fishenden joined up with them. And it was, yeah, I hadn't talked to as many people at this point, like this much about Jurassic Park. Didn't know that you could really, because, you know, like I've said before, for most people, Jurassic Park is one great movie and then whatever.
Which is also kind of what the book kind of says too. the book goes kind of like talks about how it's like diminishing returns, like the sequels. And I just, well, that I language mean, was really surprising because like, I don't know if you would ever say that now.
I mean,
not that it's wrong. I just mean like that definitive language was.
Well,
like,
yeah. And I think
that surprised
me. Well, yeah, no, but I mean, I think that's why it's almost like the sequel to the book is this podcast, because right. I can have more fun and not feel like I had, you know, that's always my opinion on, you know, there's this kind of thing where like when somebody's like, what's your five favorite movies or what's your, you know, three favorite foods. And it's like some people panic because they think that if they say the things, it's going to be definitive. But it's like, no, for me, lists change all the time. Like,
and
like you said, this idea of when you make a list or when you write a thing or make a thing, it is not timeless. You're right. The idea that we think anything we say or do is timeless is absurd because everything happens at the same time now. But also things happen in a linear fashion because we can only experience them that way. And so, yeah, no, I think if I were to write a sequel to this, which actually now that you say that would be kind of fun, but I would want to do it after Dominion comes out because feel like, and the part of like even writing that first book was that, like we've said at the beginning, is like, this might be the last time I ever get to experience these movies in this way. And yeah, I don't want to get caught up in like, you know, I don't want to make this thing not timeless, but it's more of the idea of like, it's just, you know, I like the conversations I've been having about, because I truly think the, you know, that first real season of SJR was really just the road to Fallen Kingdom. And that was really fun.
Yeah. You know, that is a very good point. Cause I think probably going back and listening to the first season of SJR is exactly like a sequel to this book, because it's right in the precipice of what could be, and exploring your fandom up to that point, and even the amazing fan fiction, your old stories. Which is the greatest stuff.
In a way, that's why for me with this podcast, it's been more of and then COVID even made it more interesting of like, okay, what do I want to do with this podcast now that almost my initial goal with it, or I guess maybe I didn't even realize at the time, was to do the Road to Fallen Kingdom. And so, yeah, now over the last like couple years, it's been like, okay, what is this podcast now? And it's, you know, it's mostly just been like, I just like talking about this stuff. And I always find it funny when it's like people get mad if somebody like tags them in the same thing over and over again. But it's almost like, no, but that's amazing that when somebody sees this, they think of you. Like, how special is that idea? Like,
yeah,
you know, if I see a Godzilla thing, I'm like, oh, I got to send that to Andrew. You know, like to me, it's almost like, well, why wouldn't I want like that notion, like why wouldn't I want to be tied like to things that I like? You know, I appreciate that like people send me cat things or dinosaur things or whatever. So that's mostly been like where I've been going. But I think it would be nice, now that you say that, to write something to almost like bookend, you know, because again, it's like weird, wild to think that it's like we're about less than a year away from wrapping up another phase of this franchise, and there is obviously going to be more after, but it's like I hope that the Dominion in a way like changes things fundamentally, like we're just going full Dinotopia. So I think that's kind of, for me, it's like figuring out what it would be about, and again, like thinking about Dominion, it's just like what is this thing going to say that is going to make it essential to me, or what is it going to say that I feel like, yeah, can speak to just the way we make movies now or the way we think about dinosaurs. That's the stuff I'm curious about, but it's like, I don't really have any thoughts about it yet because we haven't seen the movie yet. I've seen a little bit of footage, and there's some questions of whether it will be in the movie anyway, you know, with the IMAX Dominion thing. But yeah, so it's almost like right now I'm kind of, I think I want to be happy with just feeling my way around, and not have to like, yeah, not to make any definitive statements yet, because it's like, I'm happy to like live in this world where Jurassic Park 3 has shot up to the top, or almost to the top of my favorite movies, and getting to just live in this world where hopefully we're getting to think about the things we love in so many different ways, you know, because for me, it's almost like I'm tired of talking about the black comedy nature of JP3. Like, I want to learn a different way to think about it now.
Right. And it's always interesting because, like, you know, especially nowadays, we're like, I mean, like, I guess this was around, this is, well, sorry, like, Twitter and things were definitely around in 2015, but it didn't feel like everything had, like, a level of discourse. And, like, the nature of discourse is that that is always a point in time of one specific instance. And it's like, most of the time, it's like none of us are really educated on the thing. And then the thing that's like the best way of thinking about it happens when people get a chance to sit down and think about it. So I do think that one of the fun things about this podcast, it's more of just like a discussion. You're just like talking to people, have a discussion with them. And obviously, like when big things come up, you guys have a discussion about big themes. But, you know, there's really never any definitive statements.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think maybe that's in a way of like trying to break away from that need to be timeless and like, you know, I'm just going to talk about my experience on the ride, you know, from the past weekend or whatever, you know, it's because, yeah, maybe hopefully this will all just kind of be setting me up for a place where I maybe, yeah, can think about things and write in a more definitive way again about what this all means.
What does all mean and what it all means to you? Because that's the most interesting part, right? Like, you know, sometimes people go, what does this all mean? And I'm like, I don't really care what, like, it's like reading. So for me, reading a film review, I am way more interested in your subjective views than anything about objectivity, right? Like, for me, it's always more interesting to hear, well, and also because true objectivity, I don't believe exists, especially not in the world of film. what you think and how you feel about a topic is always more interesting to me than trying to figure out what it means to everyone. And, you know, surprisingly enough, this came up in therapy. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
This is therapy drop. But talking about how, like, there's no
therapy drop.
Like that there's no definitive meaning for life. Everyone's meaning for life is different depending on who you are. And I always think that that is way more interesting to find out what you get out of entertainment, what you get out of your life. And I think that that's always kind of driven out by conversations with other people, which is always the joy of podcasting.
Yes. And I will say, I mean, I think maybe subconsciously, too, that was also part of the reason why I put a Congo quote up front. Look how I'm ending this with a Congo thing again.
Yeah.
Because why my friends and I connect, why we connect, why Brenna and I connected is because it's like this sort of post-ironic age where it's like we can like something and we can love it and be like, well, yeah, there's no objectiveness, you know, to that. But also, like, let's not pretend that everything is amazing either. And, you know, there's like a healthy middle ground. And I love the idea that for Congo, there's things about it that I have found, like you've said, you know, there's these deeply personal connections. And I think it's healthy to remember that in anything you do, really, that like, that's the whole point. It's like we can't wall ourselves off and be like, this is how this thing is. And it's amazing. And if you say it's otherwise, then you suck. And, you know, it feels that that's just not a fun way to go about things.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, like that goes back to like gatekeeping, like you were saying about how like people use opinions and things to like kind of like gatekeep
to quantify your love of something, which is
ridiculous. Yeah. And again, like, you know, if you've only ever seen Jurassic Park 1, you're a true Jurassic fan. If you've only seen Jurassic Park 2 and you love it, you're a true Jurassic fan, right? Like there's no definitive of what makes you a true fan. It's like love is love. Like, you know, if you love something, you love something. And, you know, that means a lot to you and that matters.
Yeah. Well, that's a beautiful way to end it, Andrew. No, I mean, I really appreciate it. This was really nice. I feel like I've recently, with just so much stuff in my life changing and shifting, it's like I kind of have been like, yeah, I don't really know. Yeah, I'm like, I'm just going to play Magic and Subnautica for a while. But I feel like I definitely feel very good about this space. And yeah, I mean, I'm so excited you're wanting to help edit some things. And because, yeah, I've had some great conversations with people that have just been sitting around for a couple months. No, thank you so much. I'm really thankful you wanted to do this.
Yeah, you know, thank you for having me on for this. Like, because like I listened and read to this book without any. I didn't read it for podcasting. I just read it because I wanted. Like, I was like, you know, this is my friend. I want to support his work. I want to listen to his work and like see what it was like in 2015. I had a great time listening to that thing. And then you're like, oh, you want me to be on it? Like, you know, that was a nice bonus. But like, that was never It's always nice when you do something genuinely and then it can lead to a conversation, right?
Yes. Well, and I was going to say, and I don't think you said this on the pod, but the Letterboxd review thing right before we started talking.
Yeah.
If you want to explain that to people, yeah.
Yeah, so again, one of the things about this book that I really appreciate is that it's like it's very upfront with its time period. Where so before we did this podcast, somebody randomly liked my review of Jurassic World and I on Letterboxd, and I look back and I'm like, oh, this is like a 2015 review of Letterboxd. And what happens is like I can see it was made in 2015, but if you're just looking through it in like the Letterboxd thing, people just will see that as your actual opinion now.
Wow. And I'm like, oh, wow.
And I'm like, oh, no, like my opinion is very different. I'm glad you like that writing I did in 2015. Also, like the way I was using Letterboxd, especially back then, was like nobody was following me. It was just for my own logging. So like, yeah. I never think of people like, so like every once in a while people go back and towards that and I'll be like, I hope you got the context that like, I hope you clicked on the review and saw 2015. Cause you have to like physically like click on it to see when it was made kind of thing. Yeah. And if you didn't do that, I'm sorry to surprise you, but my opinions are very different. Cause like, it was like a 4.5 out of 5 star review. And it was like talking about all these things about the sequels that I didn't like that now I really love. And it was just a very interesting way of looking back at my own history of film review and what it is, what it means, and how I have changed over the time. And yeah. I mean, good ways and bad, but it was very interesting to see that come up because it's like, oh, my history of Jurassic Park just randomly came up right before this podcast. Oh,
yeah, my. That's so funny. Yeah, I mean, if you want, I would love to put a link to it in the notes.
It's not very long. It's like a little paragraph, but yeah, sure.
No, that'll be fun. But yeah, I mean, again, thank you so much, Andrew. And yeah, where can people follow you, find you, listen to podcasts, all that good stuff?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Wine Movie Nerd, and which is ironic because I don't drink wine anymore. But anyways, but it's my brand. No, it's just
yeah.
Fun name. And you can catch me on podcasting at Triassic Park. And Milkshakes and Mimosas is probably gone for the near future just because it is a lot of energy from me on that show that I can't really get up to post-stroke.
Well, so. you have had the timelessness and everything existing at once. You have the whole back catalog to listen to. Just take yourself back, you know, a couple years and, you know, go on that journey.
Yeah. That's a great thing. Cause there are, like people who are surrounded, like there's like a great Dax Shaffer and Annalise episode from a few years ago where we talked about like the history of like cartoon intro themes and everything that, which is the Archie universe kind of stuff, which was really fun. And I remember it's interesting that that particular episode came up. Cause I remember after recording that episode, they sent me all these things like individually and like they said, oh, Steven edits like this all the time. So you can just edit like this, right? And like I had this mode of like, I didn't know, like I listened to all your podcasts, but like we never had an interaction before. So like Someone's like, oh, Steven. And I'm like, oh my God, Steven is like, oh, like someone I like respect a lot. And like, I'm like, oh my God, he's like a master podcaster. So like, oh my God, like what's it like going to be like to get this thing and try to edit it? And like, it wasn't that complicated. Like it worked out okay.
Yeah.
But it was just one of those things where it's like, yeah, it's like, oh my God, he edits like big podcasts of like heart palpitating and all this stuff. And I was just like, oh yeah, my buddy, Steven. Yeah.
Oh my God, I love that. Well, again, thank you, Andrew. And fade out music. I don't know. I should actually come up with a sign off for this podcast. But you know what? Not this day.
Eggs.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.